All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm speaking to you from New York City on the 14th day of May, 2019. I do want to remind you that I publish a newsletter called Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks. You can subscribe to that by going to miningstocks.com, or call our office in New York, 718-457-1426, 718-457-1426 during normal work hours. But also encourage you to consider subscribing to Chen Lin's letter, What is Chen Buying, What is Chen Selling? Chen is especially astute in the area of biotechs. He's also done extremely well with the energy shares and also follows very accurately and very, very well the mining share sector as well. He and I trade some ideas from time to time in the gold and silver mining sector. I want to thank each of you for listening to the show, making it one of the more popular shows in the Voice America Business Channel. I'd also like to invite you to keep your questions and comments coming along to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com, questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. We do need to thank our sponsors for making this show economically viable. Our sponsors for today's show, Great Bear Resources, Klondike Gold, Novo Resources, RN Resources, and Strike Point Gold. Before I get on to today's show, I would like to remind you that if you are in the Vancouver, BC area on May 24th and 25th, there are still a few seats available if you would like to attend the Metals Investor Forum that's in downtown Vancouver. You can go to jtaylormedia.com, jtaylormedia.com, click on the Metals Investor Forum banner, enter your name and address, and then you'll be assured a seat at the Metals Investor Forum. It is limited. I'm told we're very near to the cutoff, so if you do want to go, you better sign up sooner rather than later. I will be inviting the following companies to the show. They will be there presenting. They are companies that I have recommended in my newsletter. And with the exception of, well, a couple of them, I guess I own personally, GFG Resources, Gold Source Mines, Radisson Mining, Rise Gold Corp, and Strike Point Gold are the companies that I have invited to the show, to the Metals Investor Forum in Vancouver. Well, let's get on to today's show. I've titled it Making Money with Sprott. Peter Groskopf, he's the CEO and Managing Director of Sprott, Inc., he visits for the first time. Gwen Preston and Michael Oliver return. Sprott, Inc. is named, of course, after the founder, Eric Sprott. The company has attracted a team of highly talented investment managers and geoscientists to allocate some $8 billion worth of into the resource sector in anticipation of the next precious metals bull market. And you can own shares of Sprott. That's one way to benefit and make profit with Sprott. You can own shares of Sprott. It trades under the symbol SII, I believe it is. I'll verify that with Peter. It's paying about a 4% dividend. The shares are a relatively low price now. It may be a good way to go because, as you'll hear from Peter, it's a very diversified company with lots of different products. You can also invest in various ETFs that they have, both in the bullion ETFs as well as gold shares ETFs that they handle. And the company also is very much involved in managing a couple of resource companies that we'll talk to Peter about when he comes on during the second half of today's show. Right after our first break, Gwen Preston will join me to talk about three of her favorite gold stories, which I believe that she will be inviting to the Metals Investor Forum in Vancouver on May 24th and 25th. But right now, I'm really pleased to tell you, once again, thank goodness, for almost every week He's with us, Michael Oliver. Thanks for joining me again, Michael.
Hi, great. Good to be back.
Always good to have you with us. You sort of help me stay on track and not get too worried or upset. People get a little bit nervous when markets don't go their way. And we've had quite a few years now. Well, we had some pretty horrible down years in the gold market, and then we've had about 3 years, I would say, sort of base building time frame here. And we're getting a little impatient. Michael, we'd like to see gold take off pretty soon. But before we ask you about gold, I would like to ask you to comment a little bit on this volatile stock market that we've had. Yesterday, with the gold shares, the S&P and the mainstream stocks got whacked really hard. Today, they're coming back. Are we out of the woods now?
Oh, you mean out of the woods if you're a bull?
Yeah, out of the woods
No.
If you're a bull.
No. If you're a bear, you're probably getting into the woods of the good woods. Our analysis is momentum based, meaning we analyze not just price structure, which everybody else does, but price is measured against certain moving averages, and then we oscillate them, thereby creating momentum charts. We look at them like most people would look at a price chart. They see trend lines and so forth. Well, our work told us in the low 2900s, in other words, about a percent or two off the recent high, that it was going to break down again. Now, we didn't mean break down off the page, but break down enough to be meaningful. We hit a number on Friday that we'd pre-specified as a bounce point. That was 2865 on the S&P, and it was momentum-based, not price. And sure enough, they rallied 63 points off that in about 4 hours on Friday.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then yesterday gave it up and broke through that level, closed below it. Now we're back above it a bit, and the point was to break it, and we broke it. So that's sort of a negative. It's like a shin kick. You know, you've got a fractured shin. Okay. The other level is now price-based that I can see that they're defending, and that's 2,800 on the S&P, cash, that is. Futures already traded in the night session. You touch 2,800 on the S&P, and something happens to the guys who keep big, large, long-term point-and-figure charts of the S&P. If you go back to January 2018, the top tick was 2850 on a 50-point scale. You know, X's, O's, you've seen those kind of charts.
Yes.
We collapsed to 2600 after that. Okay, then you came all the way back up to 2850, and you put in a 2900 uptick. That was in September of last year. What did you do after you break out above the high? You collapsed to 2350. Okay, now you come all the way back up. You've taken out the 2900 high by reaching 2950 this month. And what are you threatening to do? Throw three down ticks to 2800. If they touch 2800, and if I were just a price guy, I would get a little itchy. And so yesterday they bought it at 2801 and change. Okay, so they know where they don't want to touch. I would suggest anybody who's intensely long on the stock market, if you touch 2,800, pack it in. You know, this is getting ridiculous. So I think what we've got is three widening highs on the S&P going back to January of 2018, where you make a higher high, fail, higher high, fail, you know, and you've got lower lows in between. So it's a widening pattern. It's a classic price chart pattern. Momentum says it's likely to be a widening top on price because momentum is nowhere near reaching the January high of 2018 nor the September high of 2018. So momentum's headed down. Price is inching new highs. So there's a contradiction there. And we argue that pay attention to momentum and also now on price, pay attention to 2800. If you see 2800, I suspect no matter what the headlines are going to be, plus or minus on this trade stuff, we're headed down. Now, the speed is the only issue at that point. Meanwhile, gold, after having been whacked to its August low of last year, about coincident, by the way, with the high in the S&P last year, it's September 2018, has turned up, and we recommended, based on momentum factors, that our subscribers get long on layers. The midpoint of the entire long process was about 1240. We urged them to, best they can, ignore the pullback that we've had for the last 3 or 4 months. So far, that pullback has been noticeably anemic. If you're a short, even from the high in February, 1340 area, right now you're gaining about 3%. Okay, it's now 4 months later. You're up 3% if you shorted the top tick. Okay, put that in perspective. When you go back and compare to the 2016 high, that big rally high we had then, or the 2018 high, you count out the number of months we are since our February high, and you were well below the high in that span of time. We're not. So even the price action of gold is tonally different than it was at those two prior peaks, which also reached into the mid-1300s. So what we have on a price chart for gold is a bunch of guys selling the mid-1300s thinking they can sell it there forever. And we argued this last time, they shouldn't have gotten back up into the mid-1300s unless it was a hint that they were going through, and I think that's what they're going to do. So the recent action in gold, by the way, last week and then this week especially, indicates to us that you've highly likely seen the low of the pullback. That was in the 1260s. And the next trip is to go up and challenge the highs. Meanwhile, the gold miners, typical, and silver as well, they're typically lagged to gold. And when gold is down, they're down more. When gold turns up convincingly, they flip up and become stronger than gold. We expect that again this time. As gold is advancing from these current levels back up toward the 1320, 1340 level, that you'll see the gold miners, juniors and majors, and you'll see silver suddenly get a backbone and start to outperform gold again.
Well, I should tell our listeners, with respect to your service that you provide for gold and silver, for precious metals, that you provide a lot of information there. And one of the things I really appreciate, Michael, is when you do individual charts on some of the miners. Most of them are bigger companies than I follow in my newsletter. But there's three of them that I have in my letter, Kirkland Lake, Sandstorm, and Newcrest. You pointed out look extremely bullish based on the charts, on your momentum work. And how do the how does the GDX look to you right now?
Well, GDX on our intermediate trend, we look at long-term, intermediate, and short-term, okay? Short-term and intermediate-term were the things that turned down for gold, silver, and GDX in the recent downturn of several months ago. Okay, GDX, in our view, is now turned back up. As of yesterday's close, in fact, was sufficient to cross a structure that goes back several months on our intermediate-term momentum chart. It's not evident on a price chart. Again, momentum presents a different picture, and we go with momentum because momentum usually leads price, not the other way around.
Yeah.
So I like what GDX has done. We're waiting on silver. We'd like to see about 10 cents above today's high. That would turn it on, and I think we'll get it. Obviously, if gold continues to click up, the silver will get into gear again with it. I think what was going on yesterday, when if you looked at your quote screens, anywhere you could be in China, you could be in Japan, Europe, or here, and you flip on your quote screen, and every stock index in the world was down heavily. Most industrial commodities were down heavily. Basically, the only green light on your screen was gold. And gold miners.
Right.
Silver, meanwhile, was slightly down. So it didn't quite know whether, am I an industrial metal or am I part of the gold package? And we argue, no, you're part of the gold package. Don't worry about it. Now, today, gold's down modestly and silver's up a little bit. But we expect the real surprise to come if you get further gains in gold, which we expect, that silver's going to get a backbone and the miners will bolt upward as well.
All right. We'll have to leave it go at that. Thanks again, Michael, for your insights into these metals markets, which, of course, are so important to us and to our listeners. We'll look to
Thank
do
you,
it
Jay.
Again next week. All right, folks. Well, we do have to go to commercial break, but don't go away because Gwen Preston, author of The Resource Maven, a very excellent newsletter and a person I've learned to know from the Metals Investor Forum events, she'll be with us right after the break, so don't go away. We'll be right back with Gwen Preston.
Noble Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Karratha region of Western Australia, where they are currently drilling and trenching their Perdies Reward Project. In addition, Noble has partnered with Sumitomo Mining Corporation to advance its Beaton's Creek Gold Project toward production. With over $70 million in cash and strong shareholder support from the likes of Kirkland Lake Gold, Noble is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia. StrikePoint Gold, trading under SKP on the TSX and STKXF on the OTC, has a market cap of under $10 million. StrikePoint is a new player in the Golden Triangle of BC and Canada. Focus will be on drilling the Willoughby Project in 2019. Prior drilling delivered over 20 meters of 25 grams per ton gold and 184 grams per ton silver. Recent receding glaciers have identified new gold targets. Neighboring projects have been acquired by StrikePoint's largest shareholder, Ascot. Eric Sprott and Skeena round out the other top shareholders.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have Gwen Preston with me again. Gwen is the resource maven. She has a considerable amount of experience covering junior mining companies as a journalist with the Northern Miner, and has also worked along with Marin Katusa at KC Research. She now writes the resource maven, and she does an excellent job of covering those companies and an equally great job, I would say, of speaking about them at the Metals Investor Forum, where she will be once again on this time on May 24th and 25th in downtown Vancouver. Whenever possible, I like to listen to Gwen when I go to these events. We're usually very busy, but it's always a pleasure listening to her because she's a very good speaker. She knows her stuff. She speaks spontaneously, and she's just really a good friend of mine that I've learned to know at the Metals Investor Forum. She'll be there along with other speakers like Eric Coffin, Greg McCoach, John Kaiser, Joe Masmider, Jordan Roy Byrne, and David Forrest. So thank you, Gwen. I'm really glad to have you with me again. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Jay.
Just always good to talk to you. There's three stocks, I think, that we want to talk about today. Are you inviting all three of those to the Metals Investor Forum?
I am, yep, for sure. They're all three that have been in my portfolio for varying periods of time, but I kind of picked three that I'm particularly excited about right now and also that are sort of at different stages in the project trajectory.
Indeed, they are. The one, the most advanced one, let's ask you about that one first, is Orezon Gold Corp. Trades in Toronto under the symbol ORE. You can buy it down here in the States under ORZCF. 212.3 million shares. I saw it at 42 cents in Canadian money earlier today, giving it a market cap around $89 million. They have a project in Burkina Faso. That's the Bomboré gold project, I believe, Gwen. Is it, and I believe they own 90% of it. Is that right?
Yeah. So, I mean, Bomboré is, I think, how most people say it. And, yeah, it's in partnership with the Burkina Faso government. So that's the 90% versus 100% aspect. But yeah, it's interesting when you say their current market cap. This stock is down considerably over the last year, and that market cap to me sort of captures the state of the mining sector right now, the lack of interest in the mining sector, because Bomboré is a phenomenal project that is permitted to be built into a mine and that probably will be a mine in a pretty short period of time, less than 2 years, 18 months to 2 years type time frame. It's not going to cost a lot to build, has a very high rate of return, better than 40% rate of return, has incredible expansion potential. This is the kind of asset that would usually attract immense attention. If the market was any stronger, it would attract immense attention. And the fact that it isn't is a large part just because the mining markets are not getting the attention that we want them to get these days. But when you have a management team like Orezone has, they don't stop just because the market has decided to look elsewhere. Mm-hmm. This is a team. The team here is a really important part of the story. This is a team who collectively have built 13 mines. They've inked 19 M&A transactions. They've secured 10 project debt deals. They've raised $2 billion in equity, and they've operated 10 mines. So these guys are planning, financing, building this mine. And they're the guys who you want to be doing exactly that. And they're full steam ahead with that process right now. And I applaud them for that, because what they're doing is building this mine that's going to stand out as a new, high-margin, low-cost mine in a gold market as that gold market gets going. I think this is an incredibly undervalued opportunity right now. And for those who are interested in investing, both of the potential outcomes here work well. And what I mean by that is either Orezone gets taken out because a mid-tier or major gold miner looks at them and says, this project is too good to be true. It has this big expansion opportunity. We need to own this asset. So either they get taken out, or this incredible management team with such deep expertise in building and operating mines builds and then starts to operate this mine, which would also work out well for the share price. So I really think that it is well protected, and the price is a bit unbelievable. I'm not going to say that it's going to shoot up tomorrow. They're in the process of building a mine, so that's a bit of a grind. But what's really important is that this asset is permitted. So we're not in the middle of a permitting process. It's 100% permitted. They're just relocating a village and about to start building the mine itself. And so the really big hurdles are out of the way, and this thing is ready to start rolling.
Okay, so the financing is always a big issue for companies, and they're really a rare occurrence here, because they have the ability to operate it themselves, which gives them some leverage over many and most of the companies that you and I know up there that are able to perhaps to find a viable deposit, but then they have to wait for someone else to take them out. So they can go either way, which is really a big advantage. Gwen, could you tell us how many ounces of gold do they have? Are they looking in? How much were built into their feasibility study, which I believe is only the oxide portion of their deposit, right?
That's exactly right, yeah. So the oxide part of the mine plan, which is what the mine plan is right now, is about 1.5 million ounces in the resource. So that's great. It supports a very solid mine plan as it is. But what they're currently doing is looking at a few optimization opportunities for that mine plan. And the big important one is the idea of incorporating an expansion into the sulfides, which sit just below, and which offer another 2.5 million ounces of gold. And it turns out the sulfide processing is not difficult. Some sulfides are harder than others, right? But this is actually a pretty easy sulfide. So the study isn't out yet, so I don't want to put the horse before the cart here, or the cart before the horse. Horses usually go before carts. but I expect that the sulfide expansion study to be a pretty seamless, not capital-intensive opportunity to expand this mine in its first few years of operation. And that would really increase. Has the potential to significantly increase Bomboré's annual output, and that would enhance its project economics. And importantly, that sulfide expansion, I think, is key to making Bomboré especially attractive to those mid-tiers and majors who are looking for high-margin, long-lived assets.
Yeah. All right. Well, they have a major structure, I know, that looks pretty attractive if they can make it work. All right. Well, that's really a good story. I've known about it. I guess Burkina Faso is the one issue that sort of kept me away from it in a way. I mean, there's always the political risk. What are your thoughts about that?
Oh, for sure. I mean, Burkina Faso, I get asked that question all the time. I know the team gets asked that question all the time. Absolutely.
Sure.
It's a very valid question. I would say, first of all, Burkina Faso is rich with gold, so that's not a question. But it is a more functional mining jurisdiction than you would perhaps initially guess. For instance, 11 mines have been built in that country in the last 10 years, and there's two more that are under construction right now. So the northern sort of third of Burkina Faso is where there is conflict and where things are disrupted. But the center and south of the country is very functional, and there are not those same risks present there. And Bomboré is smack in the middle of the country. It's only, I don't remember the exact distance, it's something like 100 kilometers from the capital city. It's not in a risky part of the country. And again, this team has a lot of expertise operating in countries of this ilk. So those risks are certainly addressed within this story.
Okay, no doubt those factors are priced into the shares as well. So, all right, let's move along here. I'm realizing we're going to run out of time before I know what's happening. Skeena Resources, trading it in Canada. This is one that I have on my list. SKREF in the U.S., SKE in Canada, 103 million shares, 46 cents. It's moved up nicely so far this year. I suppose about the time you started telling your subscribers about it, Gwen. It's at 46 cents and a market cap of $47 million or so. They have two very high-grade former producing gold mines in British Columbia's Golden Triangle, the Snip Mine and the SK Creek Mine. Tell us about the story there.
Yeah, I mean, I've been talking about how I like projects that I'm describing as strong and splashy. So by that, what I mean is projects that are strong because they have a good defined resource that's advancing towards production, but they also have this potential to generate splash through exciting drill results or discoveries on new zones or strategic investments or something like that. So they've got both aspects of what the market loves. And I think Skeena is a great example of that strong and splashy. So both projects that you mentioned, Snip and Eskay Creek, like you say, both famous projects, especially Eskay Creek. I mean, this is a mine that produced over 3 million ounces of gold, 160 million ounces of silver from rock that was just phenomenally high grade, like 45 grams per ton gold, ounce and a half stuff. But first of all, they left a lot of gold behind because their cutoffs were really high, the previous miners, and also that initial mining effort was from a rock type, a mudstone that also had a good number of nasties in it, like arsenic. So Skeena went back and they've delineated another 3 million ounces of gold and 70 million ounces of silver. And a lot of that resource is in a different rock type that doesn't have those contaminants, but most of it sits in open pit shells. So you're talking about a resource that averages something like 6 grams per ton gold, and it's shaping up into a high-grade, open-pittable deposit. So that is sort of the definition of strong, right? And we'll get clarity on exactly that later this year, because Skeena is targeting an initial PEA on the project later this year, so I think that is going to be exciting. And then the splash could come from drilling, because we're talking about a deposit that, like I say, has demonstrated incredible mineralization in the past and recently. And so from stepping out close to the deposit, from infill drilling the deposit, from testing some new zones, I really think there's the opportunity for Skeena to generate some attention-grabbing drill results that would be the sort of splash aspect of this of the strong and splash.
What is the timing, Gwen, do you think, for the Snip and for the Eskay Creek? I mean, how far away are we from some kind of a production, and how far will this company be able to take it themselves?
Those are good questions for sure. So they're both a long way from any kind of production. We're both, with Eskay, we're just about to produce the initial idea of a mine plan, and with Snip, we're even farther back than that. This is not a team that is designing to build a mine, but this is a team that is demonstrating that there's a huge opportunity here to build a mine. So they're focused on exploration. They have a really strong geologic team, and they have a very savvy capital markets team, I would say, too. This company has demonstrated an ability to access capital in really tough markets. I'd say a good example of that, you mentioned how the share price has been rising nicely in the last little while. That happened, that almost kickstarted when Skeena announced a financing. Most exploration companies these days, if they announce financing, their share price slides.
It goes down. Yeah.
Skeena, there were so many people who wanted into the financing, even though it didn't have a warrant, that they couldn't accommodate them all, and so people were buying in the market instead. So this is a team that's really able to understand the capital markets, get people excited about the story, and I think that's showing in the share price. And, yeah, with these two assets that can generate splashy results and that have good fundamental strength and that are moving, you know, taking steps towards production, I think it's a kind of story that has the characteristics that the market really likes these days.
All right, let's go to the final one, Quebec Precious Metals, trades in Canada, CJC. In the U.S., you can buy it under CJCFF, 45 million shares, 23 cents a share, market cap of only around $10 million in Canadian money. So they're operating in the James Bay area of Quebec. Goldcorp, I believe, is a strategic investor there. Its flagship property, this Sakami And I guess there's ongoing drilling there now, Gwen. Is there? And just tell us what can we look forward to with this one. This is an earlier stage story than the other two, obviously.
Absolutely. I would describe Sakami, the project, as sort of an advanced discovery asset. So Quebec Precious Metals is still a pretty new company. It was born of a three-way merger less than a year ago to focus on this project. What I want to note is the discovery is pretty big already. It's already had a lot of holes into it, and those holes have delineated a pretty large zone. So I think Quebec Precious Metals is going to come out the gate with a resource sometime later this year that's bigger than 2 million ounces. That alone is going to attract attention as an initial resource. Second, the grades are really good. So not only will the resource be big, I think it will average 3-4, maybe better than 4 grams per ton gold. So a large, high-grade resource just down the road from the Éléonore mine. So Goldcorp, now Newmont Goldcorp, of course, owns and operates Éléonore, less than 100 kilometers away. It needs more ore. That's why Goldcorp made a strategic investment into Quebec Precious Metals, because the new developing gold zone at Sakami and the very well-known mineralization, well-understood mineralization at Éléonore look almost identical. So this is an exploration play, but it's advanced and it's really interesting, but it's not very well known yet because it's new. The team hasn't needed to raise money since its debut because it got that strategic investment from Goldcorp. And you mentioned only has 45 million shares out. Almost half of those sit with Goldcorp management and a few long-term Quebec institutions. Mm. So it's also a very tight share structure. So we're looking at drill results, a resource estimate that I think is going to surprise the market with its scale and grade, a tight share structure, a likely buyer right next door. For an exploration play, I think Quebec Precious Metals has a lot to offer.
Is this a near-surface deposit?
Yeah, it starts right at surface. It's a fairly steeply dipping, overturned lens, and so a fair chunk of it would fit into an open pit. That's, since we don't even have a resource estimate yet, it's a bit early to talk about these things, but it certainly starts at surface, strikes for a long way along surface. So, yeah, it's not a deep situation.
All right. Well, that sounds really good. Very low market cap. People don't know about it yet. The buyer next door. Yeah, all those things sounds pretty attractive. Gwen, thank you so much for spending your time telling us about these stories.
The opportunity. Yeah.
Really great, and it'd be great to see you up there in Vancouver and hear what else you have to say in Vancouver, 24th and 25th of this month. All right, well, thank you again, Gwen. Well, folks, we do have to go to break now, but don't go away because Peter Groskopf, the CEO and Managing Director of Sprott Inc., will be with us to tell us, give us his views on gold and what he's doing at Sprott to make money for their shareholders. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Peter Groskopf.
A gold rush has begun. Recently, three of the largest gold mining companies announced strategic acquisitions in the Yukon Territories. Ahead of them was a group who had already consolidated the key claims covering the historic Klondike Gold Rush into one company, aptly named Klondike Gold Corp. Led by a team of accomplished geoscientists, the company is steadily advancing exploration to reveal the rich source of all that gold. The hunt for the next major discovery is well underway, and Klondike Gold's shareholders are strategically positioned. Stay ahead of the majors and follow KlondikeGoldCorp.com.
Auron Resources is a copper gold exploration company pursuing the world's next major discoveries. It has 7 projects, including 2 active flagships, Committee Bay in northern Canada and Sombrero in southern Peru. This summer will be one of the most exciting times in Auron's history as the company turns the drill at Sombrero for the first time ever. The project's impressive surface results have identified Sombrero as an analog to one of Peru's biggest mines. Auron is also implementing cutting-edge machine learning technology to unlock its highly prospective gold belt at Committee Bay. Visit AuronResources.com and subscribe to keep up with the company's busy year ahead.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me for the first time Peter Groskopf. He is the CEO and Managing Director at Sprott, Inc. Peter has more than 30 years of experience in the financial service industry. At Sprott, he is responsible for strategy and managing the firm's investment capital and lending businesses. His career includes a long tenure in investment banking, where he managed many strategic and underwriting transactions for companies in a variety of sectors. Prior to joining Sprott, Peter was president of Cormac Securities, and he has a track record of building and growing successful businesses, including Newcrest Capital, Inc., and he was one of the founders there. And that was acquired by TD Bank Financial Group in 2000. Peter is a certified financial analyst, a chart holder, and earned an honors degree in business administration and master's of business administration from the Richard Ivey School of Business at the University of Western Ontario. So, Peter, I'm really pleased that you could join us today. Thanks for coming with us.
Thanks for having me, Jay.
I want to start out by getting a sense of your views on gold, and then I want to explore some of the ways that listeners might avail themselves to the various opportunities that Sprott provides, perhaps as shareholders of Sprott or some of the many different investment vehicles that you have available. So let's get started with your views on gold, the metal. You know, with 2020 vision, it's obvious that with a few exceptions, most investors who put money in the gold mining shares not fared very well in the last few years. And I'm recalling a chart one of your analysts presented to myself and other newsletter writers that were up in your office a few years ago, perhaps in 2016, when the price of gold had just risen off a horrible bear market. We peaked out at around 1900 in 2011, then we went down to near $1,000, I believe, and then bounced off early 2016. It looked like we were off to the races again when we were up in your office. But since then, of course, we've come back a lot. I think we bounced maybe, we might have, well, we had a nice bounce early 2016. Where do you think we are now in these long-term, because we've seen long-term bull markets in gold. The chart that I'm referring to showed a big bull market with the S&P, the S&P Toronto Gold Index. It went up 760% starting in 1982 till about 1982 to 1990 or thereabouts. And then you had another 607% rise from 2000 until 2011. But then you have these short, really wicked declines. So where do you think we are now in the longer term scheme of things?
Well, let's just start with gold then, Jay. Gold has had a difficult 8 years as it's kind of been in the penalty box. And the reason for that is that the balance of the markets, the really big markets, equity and interest rate markets, have been rallying. And gold tends to take a back seat and lose investor interest during those times because there's comfort that the world's central planners, if you want to call them that, have everything under control. And when you look at the last 8 years, it really looks as though things have been pretty good.
Yeah.
Economies have generally been okay. There's been some crises in international markets, but they've not really affected our big one here in North America. And employment growth has been strong, and so unemployment is low, and the markets themselves have responded vigorously. I mean, this has been an epic rally now for 8 years, and nobody feels in that kind of an environment that they need the insurance that gold really provides. So gold's been in the penalty box. Gold's been range-bound. It's been fighting a strong U.S. dollar in particular for the last 2 years. And for the last 4 months, just to focus on it, gold had acted very well as a hedge during the market corrections of November and December this last year. But it's become hurt again by the fact that the markets have been on another roaring sort of 4 to 5 month path. So if you sugar that all off, I think the conditions now exist that it's on the pad of a tightly coiled spring. It's been waiting and waiting and waiting, and it will respond extremely strongly to the next crisis that might develop.
Yeah, the next crisis that might develop, but there, you know, the minds and hearts of most investors, that's not something that's likely to happen until it happens. And then I guess that's why we call this an insurance policy to own gold, right? It's you don't really want it to happen. Who wants to have horrible things happen so that the price of gold goes up? I mean, that would be asinine. I'm
right.
Sure that that's not.
You don't want it to happen, but you do have to use your mind and logic and look at some of the underlying signs. And I would say there are some very troubling statistics or movements that you can track now, where you might very logically say the odds of a crisis in the next 6 to 12 months are actually quite high. And, I'll point some of those out now. Obviously, the one yesterday was the trade negotiation between China and the U.S., which really overlies a much larger structural battle that the two of them are having for world economic dominance. Mm-hmm. But if that's not going well, that becomes an economy slowdown type of risk that hadn't been expected. And that's what yesterday's movement was all about. When the markets got absolutely pounded, gold was having a great day, as you would expect it to.
Mm-hmm. Peter, this leads me to ask you, my friend and partner Chen Lin wanted me to ask you, if the trade war lasts till the election, what's the impact to gold and the economy?
Well, the longer it lasts, the more risk there is that it's going to do permanent damage to the economy on both sides. And we've baked in certain, all of these huge movements are really studies in what happens at the margin. And what happens at the margin if you get this trade war rhetoric and the tariffs coming in at the margin? Economic activity slows, S&P earnings slow, and risks start to crop up with emerging markets and their ability to sustain their debt loads and what happens with their currency. So everything at the margin goes the wrong way. So that's the risk. And again, gold providing good insurance to that. I want to point, though, Jay, at a couple of things that are even more important in the long run, in our view.
Yes.
And that is the fact that just look at the debt load and the interest burden that we've put on the economy and the future generations at the lowest ever interest rate levels.
Yes.
So what happens with that? And supposedly, while economies are quite good and bull markets are in full sway, again, what happens at the margin when either economies slow down, tax receipts slow down, or interest rates go up? I think you know the answer. At the margin, it very quickly becomes a huge problem. And what we've seen in the last 5 months is direct evidence of that problem, because when the markets were starting to crater in December, why did the Treasury Secretary call the heads of the banks? Why? I mean, you can't even think of a scenario other than to tell them, we're going to put the accelerator back on. Don't worry, because we're going to rescue this market, and we're going to tap some dovish comments and tweet some of this and tap some of that and start the programs again. And that's exactly what they did. And that was the warning call. that call by the Treasury Secretary, I forget what day it was in December, was to say, okay, we got the message. We cannot sustain any more damage. We're going to start tapping the accelerator again.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, and the backdrop to that is really politics.
Mm-hmm.
There is not an economy or a political system in this world that can become reformist right now. It's all going populist. And those populist government elections and that we're seeing, whether they be right-wing or left-wing, mm-hmm. are doing one thing in tandem, and that is printing money.
Mm-hmm.
So
all right,
we think the trend is that the world can't get off this supply of fuel now, and mm-hmm. there's just going to be, what do they call it, modern monetary theories coming out the yin-yang now, and mm-hmm. there's going to be massive deficit spending, and there's going to be massive money printing. And that's what it takes now at the margin to sustain this debt load.
And massive money printing, Peter, means massive debt increases, too, because it's not as if there's not two sides of the ledger. You know, there's the asset and the liability,
modern,
right? So every time we create money, because money is manufactured
no
from debt.
Call it debt. You just print it.
Yeah. You don't call
it.
But,
it,
I mean,
it doesn't
there's
matter because, you know, the burden of the economy and the future generations just take the extra currency and make it work somehow. Like it's magic.
Well, that's what they think. But could we see a Weimar Republic, a Weimar Germany kind of a thing, or you don't have to go that far back in history. There's plenty of them more currently. But the U.S. as the world's reserve currency, as long as we have the world's reserve currency, Peter, can't we get away with this? And how do we retain the world's reserve currency?
Well, we can get away with it to an extent as long as we're the world's reserve currency, although there's a lot of factors at work to change that. But, of course, it all comes down to inflation expectations and when does it become apparent to me as a participant in this economy that prices are going up far more than Treasury bonds are yielding. And so mm-hmm. I don't want to own Treasuries anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And when
we
that
can't
happens,
be far rate, from that. We can't be far
when,
from that
when
now,
that happens,
I would think.
Rates go up. And when rates go up again, the equation gets worse, the printing gets more, and you're into that vicious cycle.
Right.
So I would suggest we're actually not that far away from seeing the start of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that I complain about a lot that has delayed it is the constant references to the, you know, low numbers around the CPI index. And as we all know, nobody that's operating in our markets can survive on the CPI. The actual rate of inflation is a lot higher.
No doubt.
And so holding Treasury bonds, whether you're holding them in the U.S. or whether you're holding bunds in Germany or whether you're holding Turkish bank deposits in Turkey, you know, as a consumer, your money is already being repressed. Your cash is already being eroded. Your buying power is disappearing. And so our view on gold is full stop. It is a better than dollar cash equivalent.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you want cash in the bank when you know you're suffering losses to have that?
All right. So, Peter, I would like to get on to some of the products, some of the opportunities that Sprott provides for investors. You know, you can buy gold. You can put it away somewhere. You don't get any return on your investment. But that's okay longer term because, as you just said, it's a superior cash holding than the dollar even. But I would like to suggest, and I'd like you to talk a little bit about the products that Sprott offers. But Sprott Inc., you can buy it down here in the States under SPOXF, trades in Toronto and in Canada under SII, $2.25 I saw today, 253 million market cap. Or 253 million shares, about a 570 million market cap. And I believe you're paying a dividend, aren't you, Peter? Something like 4% or something like that?
Yeah, that's correct. We've done that since the company completed its IPO.
So tell us a little bit, it's for the investors that aren't familiar with Sprott Inc., tell us what your business model is, what you do. You have a whole lot of things that you're involved with that you're doing mostly in the resource sector, mostly in the precious metals space, I believe.
Yeah, so we are an asset manager investment firm in the gold space primarily. We also cover other mined commodities globally. And as an asset manager, we have management fee income over the asset and deposits that we manage. It's not unlike a royalty company.
Mm-hmm.
We sit on top of about 10.5 billion Canadian, or call it 8 billion US of assets, and we collect in some cases a very small fee and in some cases a slightly higher fee from that that stock of investments. And then we have certain operating expenses, which are mostly in Canadian dollars, while our revenue is mostly in US dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And the balance is margin. And that margin pays what effectively is like a royalty as our dividend stream.
Mm-hmm.
And we have some free cash as well that we use to invest in building our business every year.
Mm-hmm.
And so for our shareholders, what we want to provide is upside exposure to the sector. And we have that in three leveraged ways. One is operating leverage. So we have a relatively fixed expense base. And obviously, if gold or gold investments go up, we make more margin. So we have that leverage. We also have the leverage of investment sales. So if gold becomes more popular, we can create more units to our funds. And mm-hmm. we can benefit from those inflows. And that's the second, amount of leverage on our income statement. And the third mm-hmm. would be performance fees. If we do very well for our clients, we can start to collect performance fees from our investors, and then we have almost an exponential return like we did in the year 2010, which was the last year of the gold bull market, and in which we earned $200 million in performance fees.
Wow. Nice.
So you can see the power of leverage.
Yeah, the power of $200 million compared to your current market cap is pretty significant.
Yeah, the Canadian dollar quote I gave you there on the $200, mm-hmm. but it is significant against our market cap.
Yeah. So on your asset management, who are your clients in that business activity? Are they corporate clients?
We have about 150,000 clients globally that are retail investors that invest directly in our more liquid funds. And those mm-hmm. clients are mostly in the U.S. In certain cases, we have funds that are listed on the New York Stock Exchange carrying our physical bullion, and they're competitors mm-hmm. to the GLD.
Mm-hmm.
And in other cases, we have some of the world's largest institutions that invest with us, and they'll buy anything from bullion to highly specialized private equity style strategies in mining, including mm-hmm. Making loans to mining companies and buying private mining deals. So everything in between we have, from some very large institutions to some direct family office and high net worth and even small net worth investors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so your physical bullion trust that you have the CEF, that's the gold and silver, the gold, it's PHYS, the silver bullion ETF is PSLV, and you also have a platinum and palladium, I think, SPPP. I would imagine that one's not terribly active, but boy, it's a must have done pretty well with the palladium performing as it has.
It did do well from palladium. All of the physical trusts have been a little bit quiet because if you look at the overall movement of customer dollars into physical trusts in the last 2 years, it's been pretty flattish.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't seen retail investors really taking into physical metals lately, again, because of the conditions in the rest of the markets and because other areas like Bitcoin and cannabis shares really captured the attention of more aggressive investors. So the trusts have been pretty quiet, but they've been quietly doing their job, which is to protect value by storing that metal and being liquid on the exchange.
All right, Peter, with just a couple of minutes left here, less than 2 minutes, you've got the gold miners. You've got a couple of ETF, gold share ETFs, gold miners and junior gold miners. Can you tell our listeners what makes them unique, or are they unique compared to some of the other ETFs in that space?
Well, they are. The ETFs that we run are governed by a screen, which screens them for growth, revenue growth, and production growth, and also for balance sheet strength. So our ETFs will notably outperform the GDX ETFs, which are our primary competition, at certain times, and at certain times they lag. It kind of depends on the exact nature of the market we're in. We like to think of ours as better long-term value pickers.
Okay.
And
we'll have to leave it go at that, Peter.
Liquid, and they're in ETF form.
Yeah, we'll have to leave it go at that. I wanted to ask you about the Sprott Focus Fund, the Sprott Resource Holdings. Perhaps we can have you back to talk about those. Those are public companies that our listeners could invest in as well, from what I understand. And they look kind of attractive to me. So we'll want to talk to you again sometime in the near future about those things. Peter, thank you so much for being with us.
We'd be happy to do that. Thank you, Jake, for having me on.
All right. All the best. Well, folks, that's all we have for this week. Keith Wiener, who's a monetary metals firm, is providing the ability for investors to earn a return on their gold bullion, 3 or 4%, by leasing that gold to end users. He'll be with us next week. Also, Peter Talman of Klondike Gold, and hopefully Michael Oliver will be with us once again next week. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.